Well, as you heard in the forecast there from Karen, temperatures are set to breach 30 degrees this week as Ireland will move into heatwave-like conditions. Met Aaron's three-day weather warning comes into effect from tomorrow. However, temperatures today are expected to reach 24 to 26 degrees. I'm joined on the line first by senior forecaster at Met Aaron, Jerry Murphy. Jerry, good morning to you. The last time we were talking to you, you were very careful to use the term hot spell. I wonder now, though, are you going to see weather in the next couple of days that will meet your criteria for heat wave?
Yes, we do expect to meet the criteria for heat wave. The criteria for heat wave depends on the duration of the hot spell. And the last hot spell lasted about two or three days, really. But the definition for a heat wave in Ireland is for temperatures in excess of 25 degrees for a period of 5 days in succession. So in this case, while we don't expect the temperature to reach quite as high as it did more recently, we do expect that the temperatures will be in the high 20s in a good part of the country for 5 days in succession, which should categorise it as a heat wave.
Okay, so it's definitely going to be with us until Sunday. What's causing it, Jerry?
Well, what's causing it is that basically on the shorter term is we have an area of high pressure over Ireland, and this high pressure is basically contains very warm air, but also you'll notice that the winds are very, very light at the moment. So there's very little movement off that air. So day on day, as the sun beats down and the very warm air remains stagnant over us, day on day, it gets increasingly warm. In the very same way as in the winter, if you have a clear conditions, day on day, it will get colder.
And is it going to be humid hot or dry hot?
Reasonably dry hot. It's not exceptionally humid at the moment. It's quite a pleasant heat so far. But there will be a little perhaps mist and fog in the mornings. But overall, it's quite moderate humidity. It won't be quite as clammy as perhaps some warm spells we've had in the past. Okay.
And when you look back over the hot summers of living memory, 1995, 2003, 2006. Is it unusual or par for the course that you would have two such hot spells as this one now and the one 2 weeks ago?
It's not unusual that you would have two hot spells in a decent summer. Last year, 2021, in July, we had a heat wave as well, which affected parts of the Midlands. Athenry and Claremorris registered heatwave criteria. What is unusual about this summer, I suppose, is that the last hot spell in July did give us temperatures in excess of 30 degrees and up to 33 degrees, which was certainly the highest temperature ever recorded in the Phoenix Park and the second highest temperature ever recorded in the country. So the significance of the hot spell in last month was that it broke those temperature records. In terms of having spells of hot weather in a good summer, that's not unusual.
What can you tell us about the UV and the pollen indexes?
Well, the pollen index will still be quite high because once the air is dry and clear, then basically that increases the chance of pollen. Pollen usually becomes low if we get rainfall. In terms of the UV index is going to continue to be high. We are still in the Irish summer. The UV index, the intensity of the sun depends not on the temperature, but on the angle of the sun with regard to the earth. And so it's at its peak in the middle of June and then is not as high then as you move away from that. But nonetheless, at this time of the year, it is still high. And due to the fact that we have this very warm, dry, very pleasant weather, which basically gets everybody out and about and out to the beach, then they will tend to spend more time in the sun and consequently all the more need for to take care in the sun.
This is, as you say, all very pleasant for us, but this high pressure system is playing out differently elsewhere in Europe. What's been happening?
Well, basically what we've seen is once again in August, another basic increase in the temperatures once again over Western Europe. So Spain and France are back up into well into the 30s again and into the high 30s in Spain. And really these hot spells over Europe are basically causing significant problems in relation to wildfires, droughts. France has experienced a very significant drought at present, and as you have mentioned, the heat wave has now been given the name Zoe. So really, the prolonged heat waves in any part of the world do turn from being from pleasant experiences to very detrimental experiences in many places. And so far this summer in Europe, especially Western and Southern Europe, there have been significant spells of very high temperatures with the consequent effects of drought and wildfires. Mm.
It's the city of Seville that has given the name Zoe to this heat wave, a first ever. Do you think that there is a merit to naming heat waves and raising awareness and consciousness of them in the same way that we do of storms?
Well, It's a very new concept. I presume, yes, that as heat waves become more frequent, and if the purpose of naming the storms and consequently the purpose of naming by extension the purpose of naming the heat waves is to make people aware of the more dramatic weather conditions and the impacts of those. So if it is a help to make people take greater care in relation to their behaviours to deal with these situations, then it is a good thing. And it is quite likely then to become more common as temperatures increase and heat waves become more frequent due to climate change.
Well, stay with us if you can, Gerry, because I want to discuss the health implications of heat wave conditions with Dr. Amy Morgan, a GP in Louth. Good morning to you, Amy. I've been looking back over the number of excess deaths associated with heat waves in this country, and we really are very, very fortunate by comparison with everybody elsewhere in Europe because the numbers are exceptionally low. But people do still die in heat waves in Ireland because of the heat. This might sound like an obtuse question, but can you tell me, please, to start, how does heat kill people?
Yeah, I think that's the key message, isn't it? It's just the awareness that, okay, look, this is good weather and we want people to enjoy the good weather, but we want them to enjoy it safely. I suppose we're not really geared because we're looking at kind of obviously the weather scenes and in kind of on the continent, and we see the extreme high temperatures every day. So when we get our high temperatures here, it sometimes can catch us a little bit by surprise. And that would include sometimes, I suppose, the people who are most at risk. So the very young and then the elderly, and particularly the elderly then who have other medical conditions, so and would be on, you know, a significant list of medications. So they're definitely more vulnerable, and they're more vulnerable to the symptoms of to developing heat stroke. So I think it's really important that actually, you know, you should be aware of what the temperatures are today. You should be aware of how to stay safe from the sun whilst enjoying it. But yeah, it wouldn't, you know, while it's rare, we have seen it, and we have in some cases, you know, seen people in general practice where someone has rang us and they're feeling unwell. They're elderly, and we do have to take steps to get them assessed, and that is simply down to actually heat stroke, you know. So it's very important that people know what to do, recognise the symptoms, and know how to take appropriate steps. First of all, prevention is obviously key anyway. So just making sure that you know what the UV index is today, you know what the temperatures are, you know where your medications are, you know where they are to be kept, particularly in hot weather like this, to keep them cool, and that you're also seeking the shade and wearing appropriate sun protection if you are out and about.
What are the symptoms of heatstroke?
So just generally feeling actually unwell, and it doesn't have to be that long. So some people can, like I said, if they're vulnerable and they're in the direct heat, which we know is at its strongest between 11 to 11 a.m. in the morning to 3 o'clock in the evening, they will feel sometimes clammy, confused. In worst case scenario, they may feel lethargic or confused. So often it could be a relative who's visiting who says, you know, something isn't right here. And you'll find out that, you know, potentially the person has been out in the sun. They've been doing their bits. They've maybe been enjoying the good weather in the garden. So something as simple as that. They've just been going in and out, but they've actually been exposed to the quite high, intense effects of the sun. And they haven't been hydrating over the course of the day. So that's the other thing, just making sure that, you know, you have access to water, you're hydrating steadily over the course of the day. And it's important that you know that you can actually eat your water as well as drink your water. So, you know, foods that are, have a high water content, such as salads and fruits and stuff like that. So, yeah, and also prompt recognition. If you are feeling well, do not, you know, do not delay in seeking assistance and getting seen.
How often should we be reapplying our sun cream? And if you could direct this message to my children exclusively, please, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, my children also. I have a five-year-old and she's already showing early signs of being adverse to wearing sun protection, the face wrinkles in the morning when we put her on before we go into creche. So, yeah, it's difficult. Kids they're hard to pin down and they're on the go and they want to be on the go and it is hard to get that message across them. So I think it's important that they see their parents as being a good example. So, you know, if they see mummy and daddy putting on sun cream, they're more likely to want to comply as well. And that you are taking responsibility, or whoever's taking care of them, responsibility for reapplying every 2 hours, potentially more if they've been out, obviously, in the water or they're sweating an awful lot and it runs off. The other thing is it's not just sufficient just to have a little blob of sun cream and spread it all around, which is probably what we did when we were kids, and away you go. You know, depending on the surface body area, you do need to be putting a proper amount on. It needs to be SPF 30 or higher. And that's really to give protection from the intense UVA and UVB rays, which if you look at the UV index today, they're going to be quite high. They're going to be quite high the next couple of days. So it's just making sure that you follow the SunSmart code. The other important point would be as well is SPF is great, but also you have to remember that young children, particularly under 6 months, you know, that isn't sufficient to put sun cream on them. They really actually need to be covered up in terms of loose, comfortable clothing that offers actual cover from the sun versus putting a bit of sun cream on them.
Should we be thinking of babies in the same way that we think of the elderly, though? I mean, just staying completely out of the sun between 11 and 3.
Yeah, really, if possible. And sometimes you will, and it's difficult because obviously you're out, and particularly people who have other kids as well, and you have them out and about. So it's making sure that you really do, as best possible, seek the shade, making sure that you're keeping an eye on out for signs of dehydration so that they're well hydrated, they have an appropriate amount of wet nappies. And the other thing is sometimes you might see people desperately trying to seek shade and a muslin cloth or something like that gets popped over the buggy, so I would be discouraging that, because actually really instead of providing any shade, that can has the potential to increase the temperature in the pram or the buggy, and obviously that can be have adverse effects for the little one inside.
There's nothing more tempting than the idea of a cold beer in the sun, but what does alcohol do to you in this kind of heat?
Yeah, and obviously people are going to be out and about over the next couple of days, and we're practically minded, and we know the two things can go hand in hand. But obviously, I mean, people, when we ask them here in the surgery, you know, what is your fluid intake over the course of the day? And they'll generally include tea, coffee and potentially beer in that figure. So really, I mean, they are fluids, of course, but they have the potential to dehydrate. And if you have the mixture of sitting out in the sun, bit of sun cream, no hat, skin exposed, and then a couple of beers as well, you know, it has the potential to further dehydrate you and then further expose you to the symptoms of heat stroke. So I think if you're going to be out, the message would be enjoy it safely and do as best possible. Your main focus of hydration, really, as boring as this may sound, it is obviously just plain old-fashioned water.
Indeed. Amy, thank you very much. I wonder how much hydrating can be done with a 99 and flake. Yasmin Khan is the co-owner of Teddy's Ice Cream. She joins us on the line now. Going to be a busy couple of days ahead for you, Yasmin.
I think so, yeah.
How many people have you had to bring in extra?
Oh, you know what? All the family are in. We don't have enough staff, lots of people on holiday, so we all have to just put our noses to the grindstone and keep you all happy with 99.
Indeed. I would have thought, though, that people tend to be away and that this is a slightly quieter period than earlier on in the summer, is it?
Yeah, July is usually the busiest month. The beginning of August, there's a lot of people away, so mind you, in saying that, it's been super busy the last 2 days, so I imagine it's going to get even better.
There was a criminal shortage of flakes last summer. Have you planned ahead for this year? Can you guarantee us that their supply will be plentiful?
I guarantee you a Cadbury's 99 flake in every 99 that you buy. We did pre-plan for this year. There's a lot more flakes, you know, different companies producing like something similar to a 99, but it's not a Cadbury flake.
Okay. But you have your stocks, you have your supplies,
and
you're confident you can meet demand.
That's it. We have our stock and they're not going to melt because we try and keep all the units at about 18 degrees with air conditioning. So hopefully you will get an A199.
Excellent. Yasmin, thank you very much. Mention of air conditioning brings me nicely to the next person I want to talk to, Michael Irwin from Irwin's Megastore in Middleton. Michael, have you any fans left for sale?
Good question. We've good stocks in our Dungarvan Middleton store and online, irwinsmegastore.ie, at the moment with daily top-up deliveries. So stock is looking good at the moment.
And how many are you selling a day?
It's been incredible. We're probably, there's been an upward trend the last few years, but this year we're probably selling 5 to 10 times the amount we normally sell, and people buying multiple fans also.
Really? So are you bringing these things in by the pallet load or the truckload then?
Yeah, pallet upon pallet. Yeah, it's really incredible. Probably going through up to a couple hundred a day at some days, yeah, online and in store.
And is there much of a demand for air coolers and air conditioning units, or are you only meeting this demand with fans?
No, we've noticed a trend with a movement towards air coolers and air conditioners, I suppose, as the temperatures have increased and with longer, warmer periods.
And what is an air cooler to those who haven't seen them or come across them yet?
Yeah, great question. So an air cooler is basically a fan with a tank that you fill with water and ice, which blows out cold air, giving a great cooling effect, better than a fan.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking to us, Michael. I want to move on now to Spain, somewhere where Gerry Murphy mentioned the enduring heatwave conditions again. And as a result, there's a new rule on air conditioning in Spain, which comes into effect today. The government announced these restrictions as part of a drive to cut the country's energy consumption and limit their dependency on Russian gas. Sarah Morris is a correspondent in Spain for France 24 Television, and she joins me on the line now. Sarah, what has happened? What is the new limit for air conditioners?
Well, basically, everybody is being told don't run your air conditioning below 27 degrees. And once Spain gets into the winter, the heating shouldn't be set above 19 degrees. So a big shift for the summer and the winter. And basically, this will apply throughout all public buildings, but also in places like shopping centres, cinemas, theatres. If you come through the airports in Spain, you'll also notice this. There is a little bit of flexibility, says the minister. She's called for the ecological transition. She said that if you're in a situation like a gym or like a restaurant or a big kitchen where workers are running around and getting very hot, then there will be some flexibility, she said. But that is being taken to be understood that restaurants will probably operate at 25 degrees. So still pretty hot when you think of the air conditioning thermostats
Indeed.
That are normally set here.
How is this going to be enforced?
That is a big question, because most of the enforcement falls to the regional governments, who are very angry, many of them, about these new rules. We've got conservative governments in places like Andalusia, which has a big tourist industry, saying this really should be scrapped. But the minister says, if necessary, she will go to the court. She wants to see it enforced, and basically will be public pressure. She'll be asking from September for posters to go up in restaurants and public buildings as saying that these energy-saving measures are being enforced. Ultimately, we could be talking about inspectors going round to public places just to see if that's actually happening.
So not a very popular series of measures, I'd imagine.
Not very popular in many ways. It's become a bit of a political football. But the socialist left-wing government is selling the case and saying these are measures that are absolutely necessary to reduce dependency on Russian gas at a time when most Spaniards are supportive of support for Ukraine against Russia. And also, there's a lot of green and environmentally minded Spaniards who, if you stop them in the street and say, what do you think about this? They actually say, we should have been doing this a long time ago to really help the environment. Many people saying, go into these shopping centres and sometimes you need a jacket on. They're just far too cool. There are a couple of degrees that could be saved easily to make the environment more protected. And basically, the energy... or the Minister for Ecological Transition, as she's called here. She's saying 4-5% of the saving that's being demanded by Europe is asking Spain to cut energy consumption by 7%. She says 4-5% could be saved by just this air conditioning measure.
And briefly, I noticed as well, Seville has named this heat wave Zoe. First off, have you any idea why they've started at the far end of the alphabet?
I think often that does happen for when naming of volcanoes and so forth. So the idea is they would start at the end and then they would come down. So the next one would be named Iago.
Okay.
That's as I understand it. They could have started at the start of the alphabet, but they want to start at the end.
And is this an idea that is likely to take on nationwide?
I think at the moment this is a collaboration with a foundation from the States, and the idea is that I think it could be copied by other countries and other regions throughout Spain. I think the idea is to really raise awareness. Some of your other guests were talking about that. People feel that anecdotally in Spain things are getting hotter. And the weather forecasters tell us that the summer has almost a month extra on it since the 1980s. And so really they feel that these are extreme conditions that are killing people, and there should be more awareness of it. One of the research institutes in Madrid, for instance, says that in just about a week of the latest heat wave, about 510 people actually died from those extreme temperatures.
Good Lord. Okay. Thank you very much for talking to us, Sarah. If you had problems getting to sleep last night because of the weather, and it is only going to get warmer, can I remind you that we spoke to sleep expert Andrew Coogan recently during the last warm spell? His top tips included having as much skin exposed as possible to lose heat overnight, over your hands and feet in particular. Leave your blinds closed during the day so that the warmth doesn't build up from the sun. Breathable cotton sheets are the best, he was suggesting. Try to keep as normal sleep habits as possible. Be careful about humidity as well in the room, which can prevent you losing heat through your skin. You can hear all of that advice back and much more from Andrew Coogan if you want to go and listen back online at rte.ie/todaycb or wherever, of course, you get your podcasts. We're going to be speaking to Andrew again soon. Thanks very much to Jerry and to Sarah and to Amy. Coming up after the break, record highs for rents and record lows for supply.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.